Hello and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice from both the local church and the workplace. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
When I was a young guy, which was many, many, many years ago, I was born in 1955, and 20 years later, in 1975, I was cool. My sons have said I've never been cool, but I was at least cool for a season. I was a boomer. I was a part of that generation, though I don't think I explicitly said this, but don't trust anyone over 30. And then my generation turned over 30, and I said, don't trust anyone over 40. Yeah, and then I get older and older and older, and all of a sudden, I am part of what was the largest generation in America's history. Now the millennials are, but I was part of that generation born between 1946 and 1964. 76 million live births, counting net immigration, 77 million of us. And we our generation affected so much. It affected the marketers. Some of the marketers, like, you deserve a break today. That was a Burger King commercial. Oh, okay. And it was focused on you deserve a break today. Have it your way.
Yes.
That was Burger King's. That was their competition to McDonald's. McDonald's was giving you the same old thing. You couldn't do a special order, or it would take them forever if they did a special order. So they came back and said, have it your way. You notice the trend there?
Yes.
It's all about you. It's focused on you. How about this one? Go for all the gusto you can get.
No.
That was a beer ad.
See, I work at Lifeway. I don't know that.
Well, it was ubiquitous on the screen. It was not that it had anything to do with my lifestyle or my choice of drink. It had to do that it was on television, and I heard it all the time. I think it was Schlitz, but that's probably irrelevant to this to this podcast. And here's the thing about it. We, the boomers, we're always a generation that had the world focused on us, that had the marketers focused on us, that they tried to meet our needs. They wanted our dollars, and so everything seemed to be focused on us. And now what's happening?
They want to focus on me.
Yeah, they want to focus on the millennials, yep. Those born between 1980 and 2000. And they are focusing on us, but the ads now are coming from retirement homes and funeral homes. So now
you're not ready to patronize those, right?
Neither one. So now the whole shift is taking place, and it's just hard to believe that in the blink of an eye, I am sitting here talking about my generation retiring. Mm. It's just absolutely crazy. I'm in the middle of the generation. So you look at those born in 1946, and they're on up there in age. And I'm 1955. I'm 59 years old. I'm not too far behind. Part of that generation includes pastors and other church staff. And you know what's happening?
They are retiring.
Jonathan, you're doing so well on this podcast.
I'm following along.
I know. We don't even have cheat sheets in front of us for you to be able to get those answers. So you're doing extremely well. This generation is now beginning retirement. It's really too early to say that it's a wave of retirement, but it's right on the horizon. And what we're about to see are a lot of vacancies of a lot of churches. Mm-hmm. So that's why we want to talk about this. I did a blog post on it several weeks ago, and now we want to just expand a little bit about the retirement of pastors, because this boomer generation is retiring in churches. So where do we want to go from here, Jonathan?
Well, the first issue you mentioned was that there will be a lot more pastoral vacancies than there will be qualified candidates.
You know, when I did the blog post on this, there were several comments, good comments. Love the readership and love the listeners of this podcast as well. There were a lot of them that were saying, wait a minute, I'm a millennial, I'm a Gen Xer. I don't see those vacancies. I've got resumes out and I cannot find a job. Well, I was trying to make clear that this is the early stages of it. These are pastors, most of them aren't retiring right now, but in the next year, 2, 5, 6, 7, definitely 10 years, there's going to be a wave of boomer retirements. That's just a demographic reality. Now, here's the thing about it. I want to just kind of give these statistics and not bore you too much with numbers. I'm not worried about boring you, Jonathan, but I'm worried about boring the audience. Roughly 65% of the builder generation born before 1946 are Christians. Then you get to the boomers, about 35% of them are Christians. Then you get to Gen X, and about 24% of them are Christian. Then you get to the millennials, about 15% of them are Christian. So what are we saying? There are a lot less Christians from whom those will be called to be pastors and other staff. Less of them. And so as a result, there are going to be fewer to fill the vacancies, and there are going to be a lot of vacancies. There's going to be a mismatch between opportunities and the supply for the opportunities.
Well, and also in that, there will be a mismatch with pastoral age and congregational age,
That's
I would
true.
Guess, as well.
Yeah, a lot of these churches are older, not only in the sense that the congregation, in terms of when the church was founded, is older, but they have a lot of older members as well. And here are going to be these young pastors, and there will be a mismatch there.
Number two was that few churches are giving any thought to pastoral succession. Now, I know this is a problem regardless of the age of the pastor. When a pastor moves on, that succession and that transitional period is often very difficult for the church.
Yeah, it's very, just a small number of church leaders even think about this, whether they are laity in the church or whether they are the pastor themselves. Give a shout out to William Vanderblumen and Warren Bird's book on Next, Pastoral Succession mm-hmm. That Works. A great book about churches that have successfully done pastoral succession. But one thing that is unique about that book, among the issues, is not many people are addressing this critical need. Another one is there are only so many pastors that you can interview about
yeah.
this, so many churches that you can see that are doing this yeah. well.
And we've had two of those on the podcast with Kyle Adelman and Larry Osborne recently.
And they both have very clear succession plans, and that is probably one of the reasons why their churches will do so mm-hmm. well and are doing so well.
Yeah. Number three, there will be an abundance of qualified pastors for interim and bivocational positions.
So what does a boomer do when a boomer retires?
Keeps working.
A boomer keeps working. The concept of classic retirement is about to come to an end. One of the reasons is retirement in the past tied closely to mortality.
Yeah.
And so when the Social Security system was built and you were to get your Social Security check at age 65, the life expectancy was 67.
Yeah, only 2 years got to worry about.
And the government just said, oh, we're going to get all this money yeah. for 40 years, 40 plus years. They're going to pay into it, and they're only going to get 2 years back. And then yep. the boomers came along and said, we'll show you. We're going to
yep.
live.
Yeah, we're not going to die.
We're not going to die, at least anytime soon. And so now, once you turn 65, your life expectancy then goes to 85 to 88. That's not the overall life expectancy because younger people are taking the average down. But once you turn 65, you're in your mid-80s or even higher with life expectancy. A good bit of that can be in decent health.
Yeah.
It could possibly be the entire time. And so what is a boomer going to do? A boomer is not going to retire. There are a few of them that will sit in their rocking chairs, but very few of them will do the classic retirement. Most of them will be looking for a second career, a second opportunity. And what does that mean for boomer pastors, especially those who have been in the pastorate or have been in local church service all of their lives, all their working lives? Bivocational ministry,
yep.
Interim ministries, mm-hmm. Maybe some type of mentoring or consulting ministry. There's going to be abundance of persons that are qualified in ministry that now will be available for many of these bivocational churches. So on the one hand, we will have a shortage of supply in the churches that have full-time pastors, but we will have abundance in those churches that want to go bivocational.
Yeah, I know. I had lunch with your pastor today, and he was telling me about his predecessor.
Yeah.
And how he was there for, I think Bill was there 30 years.
Yeah.
And retired from Brentwood Baptist. He was a founding pastor.
Right.
And actually came back in a capacity to Brentwood later on doing missions ministry under Mike.
Yep.
So, you know, he even went away, retired, was working, I think, with the Tennessee Baptist at the time, but came back to Brentwood as, you know, I'm not sure if it was full-time or a bivocational or, you know, part-time position. But at the same time, that ministry bug really never went away with him.
Right. And they did a great job in transition,
yeah.
too. And this is a church that's been around some 60 years.
Yeah, two pastors.
And has had two pastors. Did you tell my pastor that when you do those numbers, it's a reflection not only his capacity at tenure, but the fact that he's old as
yeah.
well?
Well, I didn't mention that.
I didn't think you would, but you can let him know Mike Glenn is old.
Number four is that some boomer pastors will stay at their current positions into the late 60s and 70s.
There are two categories of these type of pastors. Let's mm-hmm. Let's get the troublesome one out of the way.
Yeah,
and
it's the ones that can't let go.
They can't. Well, really, there are three categories. Oh. Okay, let's do three. One, I will go along with what you said, since now you want to take over the interview, but that's fine. Those who cannot let go, that's true in any type of position. It can be true in a large corporation. It can be true in a small business, in a family business. But it also can be true in a church as well, that there's some people that just their identity is so tied up in their place of employment that they just cannot let go, or they feel that they won't have anything else to do. Now, I know that this is not apples to apples, and it's going to reflect my my biases, but I recently told you the story about Bear Bryant. Mm-hmm. Bear Bryant retired as head football coach of Alabama in 1982. And the reason he retired is because the other coaches were telling the recruits that he's not going to be around very long. He's too old. Don't go there because Bear won't be there the whole time. He knew he was getting beaten at recruiting, so he said, I'm going to retire and become athletic director. He had made a comment some time back, and I don't know if it's apocryphal, and I never heard it directly, but I was told that he had made a comment, when I stop coaching, I'll die.
Yeah.
And he stopped coaching, and 2 months later, he died of a heart attack. And his, again, Bear Bryant was known as Alabama college football. Mm-hmm. And I'm not suggesting that's the reason he died. I'm just saying it's pretty prophetic.
We saw a very similar thing with Joe Paterno, too.
Yes, absolutely.
Whenever he retired, it wasn't but 6 to 8 months later.
He died of cancer. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So there are a number of pastors that their identity is tied up in a label or a name. And that's tough because really that's not our identity. Our identity is in Christ, not identity in our vocation. We serve Christ through that identity in Him, but not through our identity in a local place. So that's one of the categories, since you have prompted me in that area. That's one. Another category is financial. Mm. So many pastors are in one of two categories financially. Their churches have not provided for them. They have had inadequate retirement, and so they're just absolutely not ready for retirement. And another category are those who have had churches prepare for them, but they haven't prepared well. And so as a result, either the problem with the church or the problem with the pastor, they do not have funds to stay on. And some will stay on for financial reasons, mm-hmm. because they do not have a livelihood.
We spoke to that in the Minister's Housing Allowance podcast we did when that ruling first came out last year, about how a lot of pastors were in parsonages or, you know, homes provided by the church. They retire.
They have no home.
They have no home.
That's right.
Because they don't have anything to sell or move into or stay at.
Right.
Because they've always lived off of what the church provided.
Including the biggest investment that most people have, which is their residence. Mm-hmm. So that will be another category. There's a third category where people, the boomer pastors, will say it's time to move on.
Yeah.
And there are a number of them that will do so, and they will do so in an orderly way. They will do so in a transitional way that will be healthy for the church. So there's going to be a lot of boomer pastors that will stay at their positions in their 60s and 70s. Some of them should.
Yeah.
This is one of the comments that came in on the blog post was, hey, I'm 60, maybe 68. I don't remember the exact number. And I've got several years left in me. Another one said I'm 61, and I plan on staying for a long time. There will be a number of boomer pastors that can still be effective, but that's between them, God, and the church.
Yep.
There will be a number who will not be, but they will continue to hang on.
Yep. So, and we've seen that with a lot of pastors. Charles Stanley comes to mind, who's still pastoring well into his years, and from all indications, still effective in
Ed
what
Young.
He does. Ed Young at Second Baptist in Houston, same thing.
Right.
And, you know, and there's some who have made that transition well. John Piper comes to mind as he's left Bethlehem Baptist in Minneapolis.
Bob Russell at Southeast
Russell,
Christian.
And Bob Louisville. Is still involved. But Bob is no longer the senior pastor there, and things are, you know, good at the church, both for the church and for Bob.
Right. So there's not a formula.
No,
that fits
and there's
all.
Not an age either.
No, there's not a magic age either. But I will say this: I can say with a high level of confidence there are going to be a number of boomer pastors who are staying on for either identity reasons or financial reasons, and that alone is a difficult reason to stay on.
And we had staff members of churches that were in that position on the comments saying it would be great if our church had a new pastor, but our pastor is hanging on. What kind of encouragement do you have for those staff members, maybe even those church members who see it and go, we really need a new pastor, but because of either financial issues or the pastor's, you know, his identity and livelihood is tied to being a pastor, they won't leave. And maybe, you know, they're over that dictatorial type of rule over a church and really can't leave.
Well, you know, if it's an autocratic rule, there's hardly any solution.
Yeah.
When because that's the very nature of an autocrat. If it's a financial issue, the church may need to look at it.
Yeah.
I do know of one church, and I've got that church right in my mind, and the pastor as well. They did not do this to make him leave. In fact, he is still there. But they realized at the point that he might be eligible or desiring to go to another phase of ministry beyond his pastorate, they said, we haven't provided for him financially. And they're talking about his retirement.
Yeah.
And so they actually did something about it, not to push him out, but to say, we want you to have that option so that when you get to be the traditional retirement age, you can decide instead of being forced to decide because of finances.
Yeah. So that's a good way to honor him at the same time of providing for him and helping the culture and the health of the church.
Right. And I would say to some of the staff members who are in some of the untenable positions, sometimes you'll have to move on to another church because you can't force the issue. I'll have people come and say, what do I do? And I say, there's not a whole lot we can do.
Can't lead a revolt.
Yeah,
you
can't
could, lead. But that's not
going to help anything.
No. Number five, some boomer pastors will lead their churches to merge. And this is where we hit something we've been talking about a lot lately is church revitalization and replanting.
Yeah, I shouldn't say never. 20 years ago, when I was right in the throes of understanding churches, maybe 30 years ago, I forget how old I am, and I was looking at churches that were growing, churches that weren't growing, and I never thought there would come a day that I would see merger as a strategy the way it is a strategy today. I always thought merger was a defeatist strategy. We give up, and therefore we're going to merge with another one. Now, with the number of churches that are doing poorly, are on the precipice of death, they're actually getting new life. In the past, two bad churches would merge together and they'd create one bad church and they would die as one instead of as two. Now, healthy churches are literally, or maybe figuratively, depending upon the legality of it, acquiring other churches. And the healthy church infuses health into the unhealthy church. And it's a whole different dynamic. One thing that I see happening, and again, I can think of half a dozen examples right off the top of my head where a church has been struggling, maybe it's struggling financially, numerically, for whatever reasons it's struggling in its identity, and it says, you know, we can do something to help this church. Let's go to a healthy church and ask them if we can become a part of them. And so now the multi-campus system is creating these mergers, and many times the merger is going to take place when a boomer pastor said, my time is about up. I've had, not dying, but serving here at the church, I've had a good ministry here, but I'm going to lead my church to merge with another one. That's the best thing to do. Yeah. Now, that brings up this whole issue of revitalization. And, you know, there's so many paths that we can talk about on revitalization. Merger is a small percentage of those. And you know my heart for revitalization. Yes. And that's one of the reasons that we're going to start pointing people more and more to revitalization resources. And I got to tell you, I'm excited about doing what I call a consultation. Yep. It's a video consultation on church revitalization with Church Revitalization. That's the name of the organization.
Yeah, and we've actually launched those three videos this week. So those are online.
So, we obviously have a link that people can...
revitalizedchurches.com. You can see those videos. The three-part series is another one coming next week.
Well, it's been fun to do this. I appreciate Tim Songster at Revitalized Churches inviting us to do this and to actually go into a church through video and offer them a consultation. Now, I understand that everybody gets the same video, but most consultations are about 85% the same material.
Yeah.
So I'm presenting that 85%, putting it on video, and I hope that will be one small step. I almost sound like Neil Armstrong when he walked on the moon. I hope that will be one small step to help leaders understand this whole issue of how do we revitalize our churches. Mm-hmm. And I look at four major components. I'm not going to give away the story on that, but four major components of revitalized churches. Some of them will actually merge.
Yeah.
That comes back to this point. But many of them have hope and possibility for actually being revitalized mm-hmm. without merging.
Yeah, and again, I feel like we've just talked about Mike Glenn the whole time today, but he was telling me about the Middle Tennessee Initiative and what's going on at Brentwood, and we'll point people to that as well.
He's kind of excited about that, isn't he?
He is. He really is. I mean, I was sitting at a table with him, and he spoke to three or four people that came up and were asking him about it. I mean, because the word is out in Middle Tennessee. And he said, we've had churches come up to us, you know, basically with the keys and say, here.
Almost every week.
Yes. He said he was been overwhelmed and saddened at the number of churches who have done because of the state of churches that they are at that point where they're walking up to another church and just saying, here's the keys.
And that is a sad state. And you know what? That's sometimes the right thing to do. But there's also hope for revitalization. Yeah. So I hope that we can be a part of that.
And
too.
He spoke about that too, that not every situation is right for that situation. Sometimes the churches do need to be revitalized internally and, you know, with the people that are already there.
Right.
So there is hope.
There is hope. I remain that obnoxious optimist about local churches, and one of the reasons is just doing this Revitalized Churches video consult has reminded me that God has not stopped working in our churches.
Now, this week's podcast, as we mentioned, has been brought to you by RevitalizedChurches.com, bringing together video consultations, books, and other resources from today's top pastors, leaders, and authors. RevitalizedChurches.com is a premier online destination for church revitalization. Visit RevitalizedChurches.com today for your free download of 114 Things You Need to Know About Church Revitalization by Tom Rainer. That'll do it for this week's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
Well, there's a lot of exciting things going on in local church life. And even though we've talked about struggles and autopsies and the need for revitalized churches, there are a lot of good things going on. One of the good things that's going on is the more we focus on the need for churches to be revitalized, the more we're hearing about churches that
yes.
are being. You sent me an email today. Absolutely incredible. So I'm excited. I'm excited about the video consultation. I'm excited. I'm not excited about the retirement of a generation of pastors because that's my generation, but that's reality. But we'll continue to talk about this issue.
Thanks for joining us this week on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us online at tomrainer.com.